Hello, everybody. This is Nelson for VideoGamesTheBible.com, and today I have the pleasure of having with me a very good friend for our interview today on Video Games The Bible Live, Lisa, also known as @LadyAiju, a video game community manager. How are you doing today?
I'm great, thanks. How about you?
I'm doing absolutely fantastic. So, community manager, it's that necessarily, especially with the advent of social media, can mean a lot of things. It's not as clear-cut and defined as perhaps programmer or a concept artist, the different roles in the game development team. So, first off, what is a community manager?
Well, we definitely wear many hats. everything from running the social media, planning events, contests, news. One of the critical roles is carrying information between the community and the development teams. If the devs don't know what's going on, then the community is never going to be happy. And so keeping that open communication between the two is super important. Out of everything I do, I would say that's probably the most important thing.
And it's actually interesting that you speak about the open line of communication, because you seem to have specialized specifically in many early access games and games that are being Kickstartered. Games that are an early stage of release that really do need that very obvious transparency to not only build a player base, but keep the confidence of people saying your money has been well spent and we're going to deliver a game you're going to enjoy, not only during the beta period, but after. So what made you interested in early access? Because there are challenges that come with that.
Oh, definitely. And as you mentioned, the skepticism, and there is a lot of it, and it's in some cases it's justified. I mean, there have been some very public cases where promises were made and they weren't delivered on, and it left people very, very, very unhappy. And the early alpha beta games, it's my own personal love of gaming. Minecraft was the first one that I ever participated in that way, to where, you know, getting to watch this game grow from a literal shell of what it's going to be, and every patch that comes out, you cannot wait to see what's been added. Just the excitement of watching, okay, now what's happening this week? What's happening? And you're always just kind of watching this game come to life in front of you. And as players, your community that you bring around these games, they get to influence the game. They get to say, well, I don't like the way you did this, or this really doesn't work, or this could be much better if you do it like this. And it's what allows the community to actually impact the way these games turn out. And that, to me, is, as a gamer and as a fan of these games myself, it's such an awesome opportunity.
And that's part of the reason why I love covering early access games myself on Video Games The Bible. There definitely is that appeal, being able to get a look behind the curtain and see this thing come to life over time. Are there also perhaps disadvantages to that?
Well, sure. I mean, one of the pitfalls that can happen with opening a game to the public that soon is you either end up with feature creep, because the community is brimming with ideas and there's so much that you want to do that you keep promising too much, and also just that you lose your game's identity, when obviously you can't please everyone. So when you start to take the feedback into consideration and the ways that you want to change your game, you can't lose sight of the vision that you started out with for it. You have to say, well, you know, I wish we could take all of the feedback and do it all, but we can't, because this is what we want the game to be. And if we did this, it would change it too fundamentally and it wouldn't be what we want it to be anymore. So you have to balance letting them be part of it and letting them impact it, but without going too far to where you're doing everything that everybody tells you to do, and then you're just lost. You're spinning your wheels because you can't keep changing every time somebody makes a suggestion.
Yeah, that's definitely a very big thing, and that's an awesome comment. So rather than focusing on perhaps negative examples, what are some really positive examples, games that you look at and you're like, they did early access and their communication with their players right? Aside from your own, of course.
Well, I mean, some of the really glowing examples are like Kerbal Space Program. Space Engineers, every Thursday is Patchmas. You can set your clock back. Even Christmas Day, they had a patch out, you know, right on time. Thursday rolls around. It's the community always knows that every Thursday they can expect an update to that game. regardless how large or small or how many features it has. It's just it's clockwork. And so the remaining constant with the updates and the great communication with the communities, those are stellar examples of doing this right.
All right, so moving a little bit back from general early access strategy and now taking a little bit of focus on you, even though you do like to stay out of the spotlight quite often and focus it rightly on the amazing developers you work with. As you said, a community manager has so many different hats to wear. It's something that's very difficult to just look at and go into the industry specifically for that, because every role, community manager role, is going to be different. So how did you get into doing this?
It was by absolute chance. it started with Edge of Space, with Handyman Studios. I met the lead dev CEO, Jacob Crane. There was about 2 weeks left on the Kickstarter at the time, and we got to talking. I was in some pretty bad circumstances, and he said, well, if we can kickstart this game, I'll give you a shot. And so I just dove in and started getting people. We got very fortunate to meet some of the right people at the right time, some of the bigger Twitch personalities and things that supported the game. We got through, and that was kind of my start. Shortly after that, we hired Reverb Publishing, now Reverb Triple XP, to help get the game out there. And they were so impressed with what I did with Edge of Space that they wanted to offer me a contract. So I ended up kind of working in both camps there. And then, of course, with Reverb, it really just exploded on me. I worked with many, many titles through them. And then this last October, I just decided, you know what? I'm just going to go completely freelance. I'm just going to run with this and see where it goes.
So you made the big step to go outside of working purely for Reverb and some of the amazing titles that they published. So you're completely freelance now.
Yep. It was not an easy decision to make, but it felt right to me. I've become confident enough in my knowledge and in what I learned and took away from there, and just you're always learning and you can always get better. But I wanted to have the freedom to just get out there and discover these games and, to be able to offer my help, with a publisher situation. It's, of course, the clients sign with you and then you're assigned to work with them. And it's not, I very much enjoyed working with everybody there. They're a great team. They did great work. And, I'm very grateful that I had that opportunity, because that was a major, major milestone for me in terms of getting where I needed to be. But the difference, like I said, being able to choose your own clients that you work with, being able to just get it out there and really find out what's out there. And especially, I'll get on Twitter on Screenshot Saturday, and it's a gold mine. So many great games, and so many of them nobody's ever even heard of yet. So it's all out there just waiting.
That is pretty incredible, because Edge of Space is definitely a success story. It was the first Kickstarter the team has ever done. Is it the first game the team has ever done under Handyman Studios? Because I think they've had experience on other titles.
Yeah. All of our devs have come from AAA backgrounds, but it's our first as a team. So it has done well. We're profoundly grateful, because we didn't even expect it to go this well. We thought, it's our first game. Let's keep our expectations small. Let's, make sure that we're realistic. But Jake has done an outstanding job with, keeping us on the straight and narrow, managing the money very, very carefully. We only kickstarted for, I think it ended up being $35,000, and we ended up getting, it took us 9 months to greenlight. We were one of the first to get through Greenlight.
Wow.
Or to get on Greenlight. So at the time, they were only putting through, 5 to 10 titles at a time. So it was a totally different world in that respect. So we had to stretch those funds, and most of us were volunteering that first year, because there was just no way. We had to make this last so we could see the game done. then, of course, once we got on Steam, we started to do a lot better. It was before some of the other examples, you know, some of the games that have been abandoned and so forth. So there was less of the skepticism and more of the excitement, and I think we really just got in at the right time. And then we've just been pounding away at it. We keep, you know, taking the feedback, keep improving the game, and keep the updates steady. And just, you know, keep working on launch. But we're, you know, we're still surprised by how well it's gone.
Yeah, with Kickstarters, unless you're a really big name such as Tim Schafer or Ron Gilbert, they recently had some really successful Kickstarters here. But here's a team that nobody had ever heard for before, making a very ambitious game in the vein of Terraria that we actually reviewed here on Video Games and Bible. I was very pleased with it in its early access incarnation, and you guys have done a ton of work with it since then. But just looking at the initial Kickstarter, here's a team that nobody had heard of, and it surpasses their Kickstarter goal by over $10,000.
Yeah, and it definitely wasn't just me. I mean, I would like to say I did it all, but no way. I mean, that was a team effort all the way. We live streamed for the last 90 hours straight.
Wow.
Of that Kickstarter. And, you know, so the devs were getting up in the morning after 3 or 4 hours of sleep, all, you know, bleary-eyed in their pajamas and back in front of those cameras and, you know, working all day long in front of people and talking to people and engaging with people. And all of us were there, you know, as much as we possibly could be around the clock for that whole week. So it was absolutely a team effort.
Yeah, you guys did seem to get on Kickstarter and greenlight at the right time. You know, Ecclesiastes 9:11, race not to the swift, nor battle the strong. Time and chance happeneth through them all. And that does definitely seem to be in your case. So what is your background before community management? Because, I mean, as you said, you kind of stumbled into it. How did you even meet the edge of space
guys? About 18 years of customer service and sales. I got my first job in sales. My father's uncle ran a Catholic book publishing company. And so I started working there when I was 16. And I stayed there until they went out of business in 2007. So that was like most of my career was just with the family business and just, you know, working inside sales and customer service and helping people out there. And then after that, when I had to float around, do some other little odd jobs and whatever, but it's always the same field. It's always been, you know, sales and customer service related positions.
So did that help when you went into community management?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. This is, at its heart, it's still customer service. If your players don't know that they're valued, and if they don't know that it matters to you that they bought your game, then you are doing something incredibly wrong. It doesn't matter if you sold 10 copies or a million. If those people don't know that that mattered to you, then something's wrong.
So a big part of it is making sure that people feel that they matter, that whether or not they even maybe contribute to the forums often, that the very fact that they support the developer matters.
Definitely. And one of my favorite things to tell people all the time is, you know, this industry is not about the numbers and the stats. It's about the people that are supporting what you do. When it comes to game development, these people are your fans. So don't talk to people like they're a bottom line. Don't talk to people like they're a number or a statistic. They're not marketing figures. They're human beings. And they're there because you did something that they love. And if you keep that in mind, you don't give people canned responses. You don't ignore emails. You don't, you know, you're there taking care of them because they believe in you.
So basically be excellent to each other.
Yes.
Speaking of seeing the humanity in people, sometimes that can be difficult when you deal with negative feedback that isn't delivered with the most hospitable language. So how do you deal with those situations where perhaps it's a little bit sticky or tricky with a player who might be upset or has a serious issue?
Well, in that regard, all you have to do is step back and look at why are they so upset. If they didn't care as much as they do, they wouldn't be that angry. It's an opportunity to improve the game. It's an opportunity to sit down with somebody and say, why? I can see that you're clearly very, very, very upset. Why? What happened? Can you give us more information so that we can work on this? Can you tell us what made you so mad? Because it's not a personal attack. And some of them will put it to you that way because they're angry. But when you take a step back, it's they've bought a product, and for some reason, they are unhappy with what they paid for.
Would you be okay
so that's
with
what you're working
us,
to fix.
Would you be okay with giving us like a real-life example of that?
Oh, let's see.
I know they can blur into each other.
Yeah, I can't think of a specific one off the top of my head. But, I mean, I can tell you that in my experience, I've definitely spoken with people who came in very upset and they left very happy. And it's because you took the time to sit down and care about what happened. They respond to that. They don't want to be upset any more than you want them to be upset at you. So if you care enough to just say, well, let's take a step back here and figure out, you know, did you have a tech support issue? Is the game not working? Was it too difficult to play? What made you want to scream at us like this? And you find that when you actually sit and hear them out, first of all, most of the time you can fix it. I can't tell you how many times it's something simple, you know, where they just needed to restart the game or they just needed to change a setting or little things. But to them, it's just, I've spent my money. I went to play my new game and it didn't work. So yeah. Now I'm mad because I feel like I've wasted my money. So just all you got to do is just help them out. And you find that suddenly they're not only not mad, but they go on and enjoy the game and they end up being one of your most outspoken supporters.
So from the beginning of when you entered the working world with your service experience to now dealing with developers, it's always come to seeing people as people and trying to take a step back and help them as best you can, regardless of perhaps how they initially react to you. And that's definitely a very biblical concept. And that actually is part of how you got your first job as a community manager with Handyman Studios, how you initially met the founder of the studio. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Basically, I was just sitting in an IRC chat room and he happened to come in and we just started talking. And at the time, this was shortly after I was about 30 years old at the time. My doctor had just looked me in the eye and told me I was never going to work again. And because of my disability, my spine issues. And so I was left in, needless to say, some very dire circumstances. A person has to have money to live. And so I had to apply for disability. That was about a 3-year fight. And this all happened. This all came to pass in the middle of that. And, you know, so just kind of one thing led to another, just by a chance meeting turned into my dream job. I never thought in a million years that this was going to be where I would end up.
Wow. You've spoken about some of the things you've dealt with as a community manager. What's the craziest story you have? Just real quick as an aside, it's just, I know even with video games and Bible, I've dealt with some very interesting stories. A personal story that's a little bit embarrassing was when I first started, not video games and Bible. I was 14 when I started video games and Bible, but my first website started when I was like 12. So that was a real blessing from God that I was able to get those opportunities that young. But when I had done so, one of the companies I wanted to work with, I saw the community manager I was trying to get in contact with. On his Twitter, he would constantly talk about kittens. And I wasn't able to get his attention, so I sent him an email. And remember, I was 13. In my defense, I said, every minute you don't answer this, a kitten dies.
Oh, dear.
What's the craziest story you come across as a community manager?
Well, I have to say one of the things that gave me one of the biggest laughs I've had in my career was during the Steam Summer Sale last year. Edge of Space got featured as one of the community picks. So needless to say, the community kind of went crazy. It exploded on us. And we sold a crazy amount of units. But somebody came in that was being very, very hostile to us. And basically what it boiled down to was the fact that they were angry at Early Access in general. They had bought some games that they regretted buying. So here we are, we're an Early Access game. So, you know, come in guns blazing. And this person devoted a great deal of time to attacking me personally. This went on for like 2 days straight. And I just kept answering them. I just kept, you know,
patience.
treated it like, you know, like they weren't even, and like nothing was amiss, you know. And a couple days later, I saw them on another games forum, you know, saying how amazing Handyman Studios was and how amazing I was. And, you know, this after all the time that they spent to tear me down, the next thing I know, they're, you know, complete 180, and they're saying how amazing, you know, I just found it really funny. I thought, well, you know, I guess the patience paid off. Even if they won't tell me, they're telling somebody else.
Your first job was with Edge of Space. That was a blessing how you got into that. So after Edge of Space and you went freelance, was it sort of a moment like, what now?
A little bit. I mean, I knew obviously the pressure was always going to be on me now. I'm going to have to make sure that I'm maintaining enough contracts to have what I need for income. And at the same time, I always make it a point to work with dev teams because, you know, these guys are living on ramen and pizza, so it's never going to be a thing. Like, nobody's going to come out of the woodwork and, you know, pay me $50,000 a year to do community management. So it's piecing together enough contracts at any given time, and some just need help for Kickstarter. Some just need help to do a green light campaign, or, you know, just to get a little, consulting done, or, you know, there's different needs that they have. So some of them are temporary, some of them are longer term. So it's just kind of playing that balancing act. And
so not having a cut and dry, not having a cut and dry approach for every developer. Every developer is different.
Absolutely. And each project is different. And depending on whether it's single player, multiplayer, you know, the genre it's in, all of those things have to do with how you present it to the public. You have to look for the individual strengths and weaknesses and play up the strengths and take care of the weaknesses.
Yeah, definitely not just try to cover them up.
You got to work on them.
So, I mean, necessarily now it's on you, as you said, and you're finding these developers. How do you find projects? Do you just go through Twitter? Do you try telepathy?
I haven't tried any psychic powers, but Twitter is my best friend. Like I said, Screenshot Saturday is just absolutely amazing.
What is Screenshot Saturday for the uninitiated?
It's a hashtag on Twitter, and people will sit there and share screenshots from their game projects, and you find so many that are completely unknown yet. Some of them, you know, just prototypes or concept art even, and just these brand new studios being put together and getting out there for the first time and sharing their work. And that's my favorite time to find them because, you know, finding it that early, I can help them avoid some of the pitfalls, you know, some of the rookie mistakes, be able to get in there and say, you know, watch out for this, you know, you want to do this instead, you know, just being able to give them that guidance because they don't have it. They're not professional marketers. They're not professional community people. They're devs and they're programmers, and they, you know, I won't say they lack the skill because a lot of them don't. The indie community is amazing doing this.
You broke out a second. You said the indie community is amazing?
Yeah. I mean, just the people you meet. These guys are just absolutely awesome. But they don't always have the time or the ability to necessarily sit there and connect with people while they're creating the game. So they need that other half of the picture. You're selling them and the game.
So there's different challenges with each project. So that necessarily is pretty exciting. You know, every project is different, so you have different creative challenges.
Yeah, for sure. It's as different as individual people. Each game is somebody's vision, so it's going to have its own completely different personality, its own goals. So you get to know, you know, where they're taking the game and why, and you get to help guide that process.
I think one of the funniest things, honestly, is how none of this stuff that we're talking about now, whether it's Screenshot Saturday or even community management and all this different stuff, wouldn't have been possible 5, let alone 10 years ago. The rise of XBLA, I mean, the last 5 years, the game industry has changed dramatically.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's gone from where it was only triple A's to somebody can sit at home in their living room or basement and put together a game and market and sell it. And there are pros and cons to that. I mean, you get people that just see it as a get-rich-quick scheme, or, you know, I can throw something together in a day or two and try to sell it. And, you know, they don't get very far. But for the people that are really serious about doing this, the opportunity is there for anybody.
Especially with the whole opening up of game development with stuff like Unity, and that anybody can jump in now. So I know personally, it's difficult to get into the mind of a developer or identify with the development process as a player when you're just looking from the outside in. So as a community manager, do you end up getting involved with the development of the game at all?
See, yeah, I don't code a single bit. That is all just so far outside my field. And I look at that stuff and it's like reading hieroglyphics or something. It just doesn't click with me. And, you know, so all of the respect in the world to the devs and programmers. And again, you know, I can kind of help them bridge that gap, because that's their world and that's the way that they think. It's all very analytical and very methodical. And so to put the human element beside that, sometimes it's not always there. And you have to kind of say, well, you know, I know this might seem like the logical way to code this or to proceed, but the player experience isn't coming out quite the way you wanted it to be. So we have to step back and look at how we can make this fun. And, you know, not necessarily just what might make sense, but what feels good to the game.
So have there ever been an example where, whether from player feedback or whatever other reason, like a project started to sort of veer in a certain direction and you guys had to rearrange course, or even after a Kickstarter or something, realize that maybe you guys had to go a different way with the game entirely?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you're always iterating on things. Somebody was teasing us with Edge of Space recently because we have iterated the tutorial, I think, seven different times so far. But when we first brought it out, we were all excited. We thought, wow, this is awesome. We're going to have all these tutorial, you know, little space stations, and you go through and you learn stuff. And we thought it was golden. We brought it out and the community hated it.
Really?
With a flaming passion, they hated it. They said it was too long, it was too restrictive. I mean, they hated it. So we had to literally go back and just gut it. And we were like, what just happened there?
How many iterations of the tutorial alone have you guys done?
I said it's been about seven so far, but just keep refining, because you want to hit that balance between telling the people what they need to know and not spoiling everything. Because people, in a sandbox game, people want to learn for themselves. They want to be able to explore and learn, say, oh, hey, cool, this is how this worked. But some don't, too. You always have the other half of the coin where people want everything explained, so you have to kind of hit that middle ground where you're telling enough, but you're not telling it all. You leave some for them to discover.
So after you went freelance and after Edge of Space, which has been a big topic, what was the first project you got involved in?
After Edge of Space, the next one I picked up was Kriya. And it's one of the genre mates to Edge of Space. It's also a Terraria-like, but it's in very much its own vein. Jason has brought a lot more RPG elements to it, a lot of, you know, skill system and leveling up and a lot more of that kind of stuff. And the atmosphere is just so much more laid back.
Yeah.
Edge of Space is just kind of crazy, and the bright, vivid colors and the, you know, it's
very frantic.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. And then Kriya is kind of the polar opposite almost. It's very, I mean, you could just play it just to relax. The music and the art and everything is very soothing. I mean, and there's definitely enough going on. You're not bored with it. There's, you know, there are mobs and things after you, and you do have to be careful, but it's just, it's a totally different feeling. So they've really captured, you know, taking it in their own direction from us. And people were kind of surprised when I picked up another one that was so similar. But I'm like, you know, we've been friends with the Handyman team and the Siege game Kickstarter.
Oh, the last thing I heard was you've been friends with the Handyman games team?
The Handyman Studios team and the Siege games team met each other when Kriya was in Kickstarter. And we've kind of we kind of got behind them and helped push them along. Because after we got kickstarted, we're like, you know what, we want to pay this forward. We want to be part of helping other dev teams to make it too. So we met the Siege Games team, and we've done back and forth. Like, Jason has come over and helped with Lighting End of Space. We've helped him through some of his networking issues, and we've collaborated with Korea. So it's not only is it not a conflict of interest, but it's a friendship, and it's in between these two games.
And that's one of the amazing things about independent development in the AAA space, is sort of like keep your cards close to your chest and try to find the way to beat the other guy. Whereas in indie development, it feels a lot more friendly, and it's a really welcoming community.
Well, everybody knows that if you put yourself apart and it's like you against them, then you're alone. But if you work with other teams, then you're sort of cross-pollinating your communities. You mention another game, and then your fans will go over and they'll be like, hey, this is awesome, thanks for showing me that. And then they, in turn, you know, they go over and become part of this other community and say, hey, you know, I came from this community. And then their people come back and look at the other game, and everybody wins. The atmosphere is very open like that, and then everybody wins. Whereas if you're, you know, mean-spirited and it's, well, we're better than you, or, you know, this game is better than this game, it's not about who's better. It's about why each game is different. I mean, heaven help us if we only had one game from each genre. we wouldn't have anything. We'd all be very bored.
We might end up with Goat Simulator and half of those.
Hey, now, Goat Simulator is awesome.
Yeah, they made an MMO. They made Goat Simulator MMO. That was pretty incredible. That was another surprising element of the indie space.
And it's just totally having fun. It's poking fun. It's not actually a genuine MMO, but it's just making fun of MMO. It's a satire of MMO. So it's just really funny. They brought a lot of humor, and anybody that's been into MMOs for any length of time, you sit there and just laugh, because you're like, yeah, I can relate to this. They've even got the chat window set up to spam random chat and people selling gold and all the bots and everything.
Really? And that is awesome.
So this fake community chat. It's funny. And it was one of these things where they weren't even trying. Coffee Stain, you know, they didn't set out to like, Goat Simulator was something they did just for absolute fun of it. And then, like, they put it out buggy and everything on purpose. And, like, they had no idea that it was going to be this huge, massive success. They were absolutely just horsing around. And this is what came of it. And it's become, like, it's overshadowed Sanctum and a lot of their other titles, because people just took to how funny it is.
Yeah, there's some elements in there that might be concerning to our audience, but another game that's in the similar, like, sort of joke vein that nobody thought would become popular is I Am Bread.
Mm-hmm.
My friend gifted it to me for Christmas, and I hate him now because the game is so hard. I put jam on myself and everything, and I kept falling onto the floor, and there were some ants involved. I opened up the ant farmers. I don't even know. So
that is crazy stuff.
Getting back to Korea and some of the other titles you worked on, Korea on the page, it says, has been in active development for over 2 years. When you have something in early access, you have the ability to even expand upon your original vision. So how do you keep a community sticking around for several years?
Just keeping them involved. You know, when as we were talking about earlier, that you don't really know what's coming next. And so as long as you keep steady updates coming out and you keep content coming and you keep giving them a reason to check back, they'll stay, because they want to know what's going to happen with the game. They treat it like an investment. So, I mean, everybody doesn't necessarily play all the time, but you get people that check back even every, you know, 2-3 months, 6 months, and they're blown away. Is this even the same game that I walked away from then? It's so much different, and you guys have done so much. And so if you can keep giving them a reason to check back, then you're doing it right. And in the meantime, there's so much fun that you can have with the community. I mean, with Edge of Space, we like to do like community game nights and things like that, and
so a lot
we'll
of
do
events
big giveaways and just keep people together, because Edge of Space isn't all we play. We'll get together, and like we've done Team Fortress 2, we've done Planet Explorers, we've thrown up Minecraft servers, just whatever people are into at the time, and so we, we're connected to these people on more than one common thread, so they stay involved with us because they like being there. They've made friends there. They get to talk to the dev team there, and they want to stay there.
You've worked on a number of projects, so can you list some of them and some of the really cool features of them? Because I know another really relaxing game that you've had the chance to be a community manager of, a game I've really loved because it feels like the evolution of Sid Meier's Pirates. Sid Meier's Pirates, I hope I'm saying that right. Please don't kill me, man. I know that you made XCOM and that you're hardcore, please. But it was Windward. Windward mm-hmm. is like sort of an evolution, a different direction of the whole Pirates concept. It was really fun, and my entire audience, I just kept saying how relaxing and awesome it was the entire time I was streaming it for Video Games and the Bible.
Yeah, and it gets you because the music and everything, it is so super relaxing. And then suddenly pirates. you're sailing along, minding your own business, and suddenly pirates.
I'll say this. It's the most chill pirate attack experience I've ever had.
It is that, but it can be, they can definitely sink your boat, too. It is plenty easy to die, and especially when you get into the higher challenge levels. And Aaron has left it completely open to modding, so people that don't feel it's enough of a challenge have gone in and made it super ultra hard on themselves. People that feel it's too challenging can go in and alter the settings and make it even easier. We've had parents come in and say, I'm looking for a game to play with my kids. And we're like, well, set them on your lap and let them sail around, and you when the pirates come up, help them out. I mean, it's something that people can even do as a family or together. It is multiplayer, so you can, moms, dads, kids, everybody can enjoy that. And it isn't terribly difficult unless you venture out too far. So if everybody's sticking to the starter zone, you can teach even really young kids to play it.
That's awesome. So that's just one of the titles. And one more quick thing about Windward and networking. I mean, networking is one of the most difficult things for developers, especially in early access games, because your game almost has to be founded around it, because it's something that can be very difficult, requires a lot of thought, and can introduce many, many, many bugs. So how have you guys approached networking in games?
It was born and bred multiplayer from the ground up. That is basically the way you have to do it. If you're making a multiplayer game, you want to make it that way first. And then single player should be the afterthought, because you can remove the networking aspects easier than you can add them in. Once you take a single player game and you complete the game, then you have to go back and you have to add those networking elements to every single piece of code. And you create an absolute nightmare for yourself doing it that way. So Windward was definitely born with multiplayer in mind. It's relaxing as a single player game too, but it's a whole different world to get a bunch of friends on a server. It's a lot more fun.
What are the other projects you've worked on, and what's some cool things about those things as well? Maybe an interesting story behind some of them.
Oh, let's see. Well, through now that I'm working with whosgamingnow.net with WGN, we're starting to get a bunch of people on board. We've got Bloodstar. It's an action shooter kind of setup. It's got a really neat graphical look to it, very much its own personality. So that one is coming along. We just signed Rollin Dwarf Wars. That's going to be an RPG, sort of in the vein of the Diablo series. So that's coming. Black Fawn, I've been working with them for about 6 months or so. It's another action RPG. Let's see who else we've got here.
Wait,
don't want to forget anybody.
One second. You actually signed Rollin, right?
Yeah.
I recommended them to you less than a week ago, and you guys already have them signed and everything?
We did a deal, yep. I took one look at that game, and I could see the potential in it. I mean, that is a good-looking game for as early in development as it is.
That is really fast.
Well, why put off till tomorrow what you can do today?
And especially with working freelance, I know that one of the difficulties is procrastination. Maybe it can be done tomorrow if you're feeling not so good today and the kids are screaming in the background. You just want to take a nap. So how do you deal with that?
Just keep going. I mean, when you've come from a point where you've been all the way to living in the streets, when you get to a good place in your life, you do the best work of your life. And you don't let up because you know you could be back there again. So, I mean, I don't believe in wasting time. You just keep going because there's always somebody that needs help. So this is a chance to – for every game I can get out there and help them get known, for every studio I can help get off the ground, that's creating jobs. That's impacting that developer's life. If he or she has a family, they bring other people on to work for them because now they have fun. So now you're impacting other people getting jobs because of that, and it's affecting their – and it's a spider web effect that just goes out from just one act of, okay, I'm going to sign this contract and I'm going to tell people this game is here.
Wow. And so a couple more names that you've worked with, the Survive Kickstarter.
Yeah, I worked a little bit with them, basically just volunteering for them, see where I could get them. It's still in progress, even though the Kickstarter didn't come through for him. But he recognized that he needed to get a little bit farther before he tries again, because the game has a demo, but there's not that much to do yet. So he wants to go in and get all the player housing and the crafting elements and the building elements and really bring a lot more of that game together and then present it again, because it has so much more to offer than was there. It was basically – the demo was basically – Zombie Shooting Simulator 2014. All you could do was shoot zombies with a bow and arrow. But even that, I mean, it was still neat. The combat feels very satisfying. But if that's all there is to do, people can only do that for so long. So he kind of went back to the drawing board, and he's plugging away on that. let's see here. We're going to be working with Agent Awesome. It's a comedy game. Basically, takes place in kind of an office or corporate setting, and you're the little guy at the bottom of the chain. And among all these bad guys, you're trying to prove that you're the baddest of the bad. So you're kind of running amok through these offices and stuff, causing chaos. And it's 100% comedy. It's
like Goat Simulator for frustrated office workers.
Yes, exactly.
Trailblaze was another one. I actually wrote some of the materials on the website for that, and that looks really cool. Trailblaze.
Yeah, and Max has had to go try to get some part-time work to help kind of bolster him. He's just not in a position to do it full-time, so the game's still definitely going to be worked on. He's motivated to get it out there and get it finished, but that one's going to be on a little bit slower track now, too. He has to kind of take a step back, and, you know, it's difficult to, you know, for these teams and especially people working on solo projects to decide when to make that leap to, you know, to go from, I'm going to quit my day job and just do this, because it's a risk. If you don't get your funding, or if the pieces don't fall immediately into place, you can find yourself in a bad position and you have to scramble to get contract work or whatever else you can do.
Courier of the Crypts.
Again, funding drive didn't go through, but these ones that at the end of the year, once you get into the holiday season, it's just a bad time to do funding drives. Everybody is focused on Christmas shopping and so on and so forth. So it's not a time that people want to make an investment. It's a time people want to get something that they can directly have right then. So, that's very much still in the works. He's working very hard on the game, but he also has to go get some contract work on the side to keep that going. Courier's been in the works for 4 years, You know, so he is absolutely dedicated to getting that game done.
Cell Swords is another one.
We worked with them just a little bit. Again, you know, a lot of these, what happens is we get projects that ask for help, you know, mid Kickstarter or so, and at that point it's kind of too late to spin up a lot of marketing for, you know, you're already halfway there, and in the middle of a Kickstarter campaign is when you hit this lull in it, and it doesn't matter how good your marketing is, you're gonna, about week 2 to 3, you're gonna hit a point where it's just silence,
and then it will pick up a little bit by the end, right?
Yeah, people are excited when it very first launches, and they're excited at the very end. All the last minute people will come in and say, well, I want to hurry up and get in on this one before it's over. So, I mean, you got to keep the pressure on. One of my developers described it as a 30-day job interview with the world. And basically, that's, I mean, it's a very apt description. You're in the spotlight that whole time, and you have to stay in touch. You have to be, you know, in touch with the press. You have to be in touch with your players, your fans. You have to be trying to bring in new fans, and you have to stay on top of it the entire time.
Speaking of being in touch with players and your fans, one of the big things is, wow, that left my mind really quickly. It was a great question. Just imagine I asked you a great question right now.
Well, if you had, I would give you a great answer.
Touche. One thing is, I see you do a lot of name dropping and even backing of games that you aren't directly involved with. I mean, that's really pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, the whole reason I'm here is because somebody gave me a chance, and I mean to give everybody else a chance that I possibly can. And whether or not there's money for me in that, I, you know, if I see somebody out there working really hard and they've got a great game, I'm going to speak up for them.
And actually, you were speaking of some of the press runs and all that stuff. I think that would be a good place to end it with. You've worked with a number of other things, including Black Wake, and you can finish naming them off before we hit this.
I've got
question.
Rogue Stars. That's another 2D platformer coming out. I'm looking to work with Eden Star. We've got a contract on the table there. Eden Star is going to be amazing.
A lot of stars.
Yeah, there are a lot of stars. A lot of space games and what have you. Let's see. Freeholder coming out from Rogueware. It's going to be a little strategy game. So that's kind of a different one for me. They're the first one that I've gone with that genre. Dungeon Colony, the WGN baby there. Great little dungeon crawler. Really, really nice project there. So he actually just got greenlit. So
awesome.
Congratulations to them.
And you guys have actually gotten a number of games greenlit. Edge of Space, that game as well.
Yeah.
I'm taking a look at Eden Star right now.
Courier got greenlit. Survive has been greenlit for a while. He actually, it caught him by surprise. He put it on there early thinking, well, it's going to take me a while to get through. And so he got through like last year. But the game, of course, was nowhere near ready. He expected to sit on Greenlight, you know, having to campaign and really work at it, and people just voted it right through. So, you know, when he's doing his beta testing and stuff like that, he's actually able to let people get keys right away. And he's selling through the website for people to get right into Survive. So,
And I'm taking a look at Eden Star. I mean, I don't know how appropriate it will be for our audience yet, but it looks really, really good.
It's so beautiful. That is one of those, you just look at it, and it's, the visuals are just beautiful on that game.
And it's
done in Unreal 4, and it's...
And it's amazing that game could not have been made a couple of years ago.
Yeah, that is quite a project. I met those guys late... Well, I'm trying to remember how early in the year it was. I met them last year, and I was going to originally help just like with some forum moderation and stuff like that, and they kind of went quiet for a while and went back, you know, they were working really hard on getting the tech demo done and all that kind of stuff. So we lost touch for a while. And then about October or so, they came back and said, you know, we're just about ready and we want you to work with us. So
yeah, and that was greenlit.
That's going to be fun.
So those are some of the awesome titles that Lisa at Lady Aiju, if you're interested in her services, I definitely recommend her. She's one of the best community managers I know, and I've met quite a few. And community managers, period, are great. You aren't a humongous name, but you're one of the hardworking and really awesome ones I know. So many thanks to you for what you do in the game development community. Do you have a list on a website so that people can check out these games?
Not currently, but I mean, I'm always open to talking to people. So if anybody's curious and wants to get a better look at some of these, I love meeting new people. Anybody can add me. I add people on Steam all the time. I add them on Skype. I add them on Twitter. And it's, if anybody wants to get in touch with me, I'm easy to find.
So that's at Lady Aiju if you're interested in her services. And so finally, you were speaking about community management, some of the good community management practices. Aside from how to deal with people when you're interacting with your community, what is the best way that you found to promote games? How have you dealt with YouTubers and perhaps finding the right ones to give games to and to promote games through and et cetera?
Well, I mean, I don't know as many YouTubers as I do Twitch personalities. Live streaming, I think, is a huge, huge, huge tool, and still really, you know, underused. Twitch themselves recently added game development and game design as categories on Twitch. I mean, they're heavily supporting game developers just coming on. You know, you're making a game. You're sitting there working. Turn on a webcam and talk to people while you do it. People want to be a startling amount of people want to watch somebody sit there and code. So, you know, it's a chance to get the project out there very, very early. It's a chance to show people behind the scenes how it works and how you do what you do, how you make these games come, you know, to happen. And so, you know, get out there and share what you're doing. You don't even lose time at work because you're still working on your project, but you're able to talk to people while you do it. And from what I've talked to a lot of my developers that stream on Twitch and do the dev streaming, you know, they say it helps keep them focused. You can't, you know, wander off and watch TV if you have a webcam on. So they're able to sit there and keep engaged with the project and get some, you know, really good quality feedback from people that are watching as well. So Twitch is a big, big, big help.
Specifically, one thing I did want to address is that sometimes there is obviously scammers and those who are just trying to pick up a free game rather than perhaps help promote a game or help a developer. So how do you spot a scammer?
Oh, you got to do your homework. You know, if somebody you've never heard of comes and claims to represent a major media outlet, it's very easy to shoot an email and say, you know, this person is saying that they're with you. Can you please verify that you wanted to do some coverage on this game? Just trace it back. You know, if it's a level zero Steam account with no games and their profile is private and they're claiming to work for Kotaku or PC Gamer, or chances are they probably don't. you gotta do some homework and just look at what's in front of you. It's pretty obvious. And if somebody is using NetSpeak and such at you and saying that they're a reporter, they're probably not, because they're not going to talk to you that way.
So the typical reporter won't be typing you with LOL cat butt jokes?
Probably not. So if you throw game keys at somebody that approach you that way, you probably are just giving freebies to somebody.
So what is the biggest piece of advice that you've picked up along the way? So what's the greatest piece of advice you've come across?
Well, I mean, in general and just in my line of work, it's never too early to build a community. It doesn't matter if you're still even just in the concept phase, start talking to people, because the earlier you start to build it, and it takes time. I mean, community is not something that happens overnight. So start early and keep at it, and don't ever say, well, I can't focus on everything, so I'll just let my community go. Because you can code the greatest game ever made, but if you don't have anybody there that knows you're there, then you're still not going to sell it.
That is definitely great advice. And this has been at Lady Aiju, Lisa, speaking about her experience in community management. Anything final you'd like to say to everybody listening?
Just stay awesome. And thanks very much, Nelson, for having me on, and for talking with me today and giving me a chance to talk about some of my dev babies here.
It's been an absolute pleasure. This has been Nelson for Video Games and Bible and Video Games and Bible Live. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and God bless you until next time.